On today's episode of The Good Word, we talked to Dan Titus about the Denver Nuggets and Jamal Murray dropping 45 last night. Do they still need to make a move? The Philadelphia 76ers, do they need to rebuild? And we talked to Ice Young about Draymond Green's comments about the Golden State Warriors and the new Women's League Unrivaled. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Before we get into the show, a couple of bits of business to get into. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and make sure you leave us a rating and a review wherever you are listening to this audio podcast. Today it is Wednesdays, which means we got Ice and my man Dan Titus. Dan, how's Philadelphia feeling about this weekend with the Eagles? Are y'all... I know you don't live there, but yeah. Is Philly fan feeling a little angst right now? Is the booty cheeks getting a little tight?
Honestly, I feel like that's the only good thing to talk about is the birds. The Philadelphia 76ers is going through a rough patch, but I feel like it's looking good for the birds. We'll see if Jalen Hurts. He might have to pass a little bit more than he's had to in recent games, but I think we'll see him show out and bring on Detroit, man.
Look, you can say that. Look, I know people would think that that's like going to hit me in the heart. No, I don't. It don't.
You're not one of those Dallas fans, are you? That just kinda...
No, I'm not. I'm just not a Lions fan. Now, if the Cowboys and the Lions played in the playoff game, I'd root for the Lions. I'll tell you that now.
That's fair.
All of my 1990s Barry Sanders, Emmitt Smith angst would bubble back up to the surface, right? I'll tell you that now.
How can you not be a Lions fan and have Barry Sanders? He's only the greatest running back ever.
Because they made him quit. You just let it right down the wheelhouse. You just gave me an 85-mile-an-hour fastball because they made him quit. That's why.
Yeah.
They weren't winning the Super Bowl, but I wanted that rushing record. And when they made the greatest running back of all time quit, you know what I said? This is as good of a time as any to get out of this toxic relationship. I'm going to exercise maturity. I'm going to exercise good judgment. And I haven't been back. That's how that goes.
I mean, you left at a good time. I mean, you only missed like Megatron be like one of the greatest wide receivers ever. But that's okay because they didn't win anything. So, you know what I mean? If you want to get back on the bandwagon, I feel like they'll allow you to get back.
I could still enjoy Megatron when I'm rooting for the Lions. Because why? Because fantasy football. That's why. See how that goes? I got you. Now, speaking of poor judgment, the Denver Nuggets last night. And I say that to say it's poor judgment on my part. Raise your hand if you thought Russell Westbrook was capital W, capital D, washed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
It was more about the situation just not catering to Russ's strengths. Whereas, like, now you put him with Jokic, and it's like, oh, it's Russ is back. Russ never left. Like, this is the Russ that we want. Slashing, cutting, not taking ill-advised threes, playing Russ basketball.
That is how we can explain the greatness of Nikola Jokic for those who have a hard time. Like absorbing. I don't see how anybody could have a hard time absorbing it after a championship, three MVPs, maybe a fourth, and all this other type of stuff. But watching Russell Westbrook in the wilderness and then watching Russell Westbrook play with this guy, like, oh, yeah, I'm a believer now. Like, not anybody can play with him, but he can make or bring out the best of anybody. Like, Russ as a starter in 17 games, I believe, they're 13-4, 15-8-7. It's not triple-double, 30-point triple-double Russ, but it is the most efficient Russ that you're going to see, and he's shooting like 54% from the field. I feel like it's two keys for them, and I'm going to turn it over to you, Dan. Two keys for them if Denver's actually going to challenge the likes of the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Houston Rockets, whoever you think is at the top of the Western Conference. Jamal Murray and Russell Westbrook. And suffice to say, I feel like I have more confidence in Russell Westbrook showing up and doing what he does more than Jamal Murray.
I mean, Jamal Murray answered the call last night.
Yes,
he did. I know he wasn't listening to Shaq pregame, but postgame he acknowledged like, yo, man, I haven't been playing well. This is easily the best game I've had all season. And an aggressive Jamal Murray makes the Denver Nuggets not worried about, hey, how far can we take this? They already know where they're going to get at Nikola Jokic. I think they've been getting above expectations from Russell Westbrook. But if imagine if Jamal Murray can return to form, I'm not saying he's going to drop 45 every game, but I mean, him just being aggressive and assertive and confident in his jumper, I mean, he was getting shots. He just looked way too comfortable out there last night. And maybe that could be the turning point of where this Denver Nuggets can go if we see an aggressive Jamal Murray. But to this point, like, we haven't really seen that level of consistency from him. But he looked great last night. I mean, 32 points in the first half. Like, he just couldn't miss.
The crazy thing is they have one of the league's best offenses with Jamal Murray being down across the board.
Yeah.
His shooting is down. His efficiency is down. It almost looks like his desire is down. Like, this is not me saying this. This is things that I've heard from people who watch Denver on a regular basis, the scouts, the executives. They're like, Jamal Murray looks satisfied. And that's the one thing I think that you don't want to hear about a player is, oh, he got his money, he got a championship, now he's satisfied. If he's the guy, not just last night, Titus, but if he's the guy that we saw against the Lakers, or that we always see against the Lakers.
Always against the Lakers.
Right? If he's the guy then you really have something. You don't need him to score, like you said, 46 every night like he did against a Dallas team that's without Luka Doncic, that Kyrie had just come back from. You know, Derek Lively,
Lively left early.
Leaving the game. Like you don't take much from the details of the game, but you take something from the attitude of the player. You take something from the approach of the player. You take something from the desire of the player. And I think that's where, if you look at this Western Conference as being remotely open, if you look at Denver as having remotely a chance, it would be because Jamal Murray plays with that type of spirit and that type of attitude. The problem is, I don't know if I trust him playing with that type of spirit and that type of attitude when it counts.
Do you still trust them? I mean, do you trust this current configuration? Like, assuming you're not going to get that consistent Jamal Murray, do you think that they still need to make a move at the deadline to bolster this team to actually have a chance against an Oklahoma City, a Memphis, et cetera?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I am not a person that says, hey, guys, let's just stay the course. When you have a season and a half of evidence that, hey, maybe we're running up against a buzzsaw here, and the buzzsaw being us and our own desire, us and our own chemistry, us and our own maybe lack of defense, shot creation outside of Nikola Jokic being an issue. I'm telling you now, people will, like, clip this. Carter Singh, clip this when I say this. Go get Zach LaVine. Whoever goes and gets him, I will say it to him blue in the goddamn face. Go get him. An efficient player who's, yes, everybody's going to talk about the contract. He's making 43, 46, 47, whatever it is. I don't care. If you are in the business of winning and you have Nikola Jokic at the peak of his powers, averaging damn near a triple-double just to keep you guys afloat, go get another guy who can go and get his own shot. And here's what else I think, and I think this speaks to either the greatness of Nikola Jokic or a little bit of that sort of satisfaction. Everybody's real comfortable with Jokic being the man there, Titus. And I say that not as a detraction from Jokic's greatness, because we all know how great I think, or I know Nikola Jokic is. But you need to have a guy every now and again that says, I'm the best player on the floor. That says, I'm not going to let Nikola Jokic feed me everything tonight. I'm going to go and get my own. I got a little bit of that extra dog in me. That's Zach LaVine. He's got the extra dog in him. And he's toiling away in Chicago, because Chicago doesn't have any idea of what they want to do. Do they want to get better? Do they want to rebuild? I think they want to get better, but you're not going to get better when you have that type of trade chip and you have all the other pieces that you have. You need to just make a decision, see what you can get for Zach LaVine, and move on. And whatever that is, even if that is Jamal Murray, so be it. That's where I sit on that. They need to make a significant personnel move to really keep themselves in the conversation.
I mean, Zach LaVine's doing everything that he can to get out of Chicago. This man in January is averaging 33 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, shooting 58% from the field, 68% true shooting percentage. I mean, this guy is auditioning for you to go get him. Like, this could be that missing piece of someone that could challenge oh, Jokic, in terms of like, yeah, as you said, I'm the best player on the floor. And I think it just raises the floor because you're going to have those ups and downs of Jamal Murray. You got a 20-point bucket getter sitting right next to you. And oh, by the way, you can have Russ still create for others in the second unit. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, you still got Aaron Gordon as the ultimate sort of, I don't say plug and play, but as the guy that fills in all the blanks. Michael Porter Jr. is going to be who he is. I think expecting him to be the second option superstar maybe is a little bit over his skis, right? Okay, fine. But I do think that with Nikola Jokic being 29 years old, I don't know how much better you can expect him to be. And with the NBA's, the luxury tax aprons and everything else, Titus, I don't think you can build teams with 4 or 5 years in mind. Maybe 3 years is the most that I think you can realistically think of when you think of contracts and rookie scale deals and how quick you have to pay young players and how much you have to pay young players and how punitive the tax aprons are. If you've got a window, I think you got to go for it right then and now. They're not Golden State, who I'm going to talk about with ISIS later. Like, they're right in the middle of it, man. Like, they need to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is where we're going to see where this new CBA kind of takes shape, because we don't really know how teams are starting. I mean, we know teams are being frugal, right? They can't just buy a championship, but you have to balance out the veterans with the younger players that are coming up on their rookie deals. And when you're talking about Stephen Curry, you know, 36 years old versus Nikola Jokic, who's 29, you still have some pretty nice runway of a championship opportunity. So you have pretty affordable deals right now. Maybe you take it to the next level, because you already spent all that money on Jamal Murray. So that it is what it is. You got to wipe your hands on that. But if you have an opportunity to get this guy another championship, you take it.
Now, Dan, I want to call you to the carpet here, because last week when we were here, we were talking about the OKC Cleveland game. And you issued a little bit of a hot take, right?
And they got, hey, it was a close game, but better team won. That was Cleveland Cavaliers.
So you still stick with the Cavs being the better team, the best team in the NBA?
I mean, I still think the Thunder are the best team in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, that's all I meant. Yeah,
the Thunder are the best team in the NBA. But I think the Cavaliers put the NBA and world on notice, like, hey, we're in that conversation too. But I think the difference is that I don't see who's the biggest threat to the Thunder in the Western Conference. I know who the biggest threat to the Cleveland Cavaliers is in the Eastern Conference.
Well, I feel like we're not at that point of conversation for the Cavs. Despite their record, the lead dog is still the Boston Celtics.
Right. Yeah. All right. Fair. Yeah. That's my point. Exactly. So that's why I can't give the Cavaliers that respect yet, because I still feel like they're not the best team in the Eastern Conference. By record, they are, but
yes.
I think that the Boston Celtics are just, they're playing it fine. They're healthy-ish. They're looking to the playoffs. So yeah, we'll see who's real once it comes, you know, that time frame. But
now the Cavs got their winning streak snapped by the Indiana Pacers, who were playing the second half without Tyrese Halliburton, and then went to Indy and smacked them. Does that turn you any? Because the Pacers were probably one and two as far as the hottest team in the Eastern Conference. Like, there's been three hot teams in the East. It's been Cleveland, it's been Indy, it's been Detroit, and with those two teams playing round robin, do you think that the Cavs exacted enough revenge with the way that they beat, especially with Donovan Mitchell playing the way that he played in the first half of that game? Do you look at the Cavs and say, not from a regular season standpoint, because we know it only matters but so much, but are the Cavs even more dynamic than you anticipated they would be?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're way more dynamic. I mean, I think at this point now, they're starting to get healthier. They're getting Max Strus back into the lineup. But I think it's more about the sacrificing that Donovan Mitchell has made.
Yeah.
Last night, he was very aggressive from the onset. What do you have, like, you know, 16 points in the first quarter, something like that?
Yep.
Just went off. And I think that just shows his maturity and where he's at in his career. Because before, I feel like he was probably stat hunting a little bit. Like, he wasn't really caring about getting other people involved. That's why Darius Garland kind of suffered the last couple of years with him. But now you see him sharing the ball and now taking his time to, like, no, I need to enact my will and just take over this game. And that's what he did. You know that Donovan Mitchell can still do that. That's a great ace in the hole of, like, yo, if I need you to come out and go get 30, you can do it. But you're also looking at the evolution of Evan Mobley. And I feel like the first time I hopped on your pod. We talked about where the Cleveland Cavaliers, what would it take for them to get to that next level? And it was unlocking Evan Mobley. And that's where I think this team has taken the biggest upswing in their development. Is like, we're actually playing through this guy. He can do a multitude of things. He's becoming that like Tim Duncan type of glue that they need to be a championship like team. And then, oh, by the way, you got several efficient bucket getters on the side of you, and you have another front court mate in Jared Allen, who's also putting up an all-star campaign. So they're just solid. Like, they're a very good team. I just want to see them more battle tested once we get to the thick of it in the end of the season. But hey, a win over the Thunder was good. They beat a very good Indiana Pacers team that's trending up right now. Yep. So yeah, I think Cleveland's looking really good. Really good.
I told y'all months ago. I told y'all years ago.
Yeah, it was years.
Y'all want to sell me your Evan Mobley stock? I will buy it. I have bought all of y'all stock who have said, nah, he ain't it. He's not aggressive enough. I don't know if he's got it. Y'all saw him getting thrown around in that playoff series by the New York Knicks, and y'all were ready to sell me the stock. Don't get me wrong. That made me feel a little on the...
I was a little worried.
Not gonna lie, I was a little worried myself. Okay, I don't like my big man looking like, you know, looking like the world of sticks. If you've seen the world of sticks on Instagram, you know, with stick figures. Yeah, you ever see? I'm gonna have to introduce you to the stick figures on Instagram.
Yeah, right? I'm about to say, I don't know the stick figures. Let me find that.
It is absolutely hilarious and sophomoric, but it's very relatable. So I'm gonna send you a couple of them, right? But Evan Mobley being the guy who, A, can stretch the floor, like, that's the thing that unlocked it. I hate the fact that we have to talk about a 6'10", 6'11" guy
shooting
threes and having to stretch the floor, and that being the thing to unlock the entire team, the entire franchise, but that's what's happened there. Secondarily, for Donovan Mitchell, and I agree with your point, is that he always felt like he had to impact the game by scoring. When you're 6'1" or close to 6'2", it's probably hard to balance between being really aggressive and also getting people involved. Because he's a stocky 6'2", which means you're getting to the lane, you're being physical, he's got a wet jump shot, all that type of stuff. I think he's a little bit of maturity, better players playing around him figuring it out. You know what I mean? Those guys stepping themselves up too. I'm very curious how that looks in a playoff setting where you have two small-ish guards that you can trap. Now, you can both shoot, but you can also trap them. Who's going to be that safety valve? Maybe that's going to be Evan Mobley in the middle of the floor as the guy who can secondarily make plays in the pocket. I'm really curious what this team is going to look like in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It's going to have to be Evan Mobley stepping up to keep defenses honest. Because they're going to be sending so much attention and gravity towards Donovan Mitchell, because you can't allow him to get hot. So, yeah, I think that this team is very deep, and we haven't really seen a lot of it yet. Caris LeVert has been having a decent season. They have the depth to be able to withstand a deep playoff run if they can stay healthy. So it's not a team I want to see in the playoffs, but I think that they still have a little bit to go to start talking to them in the conversation to the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, it's a weird thing with the Celtics just because you're just not sure. Not that they're not having a bad season by any stretch, but they set the bar so high last year with basically playing the game of math that you wondered if they were going to come back this year. And they basically come back the same way, essentially. They just had a few injuries and the championship malaise and everything else. But assuming health, I feel like, unfortunately, we will all be in Boston in June. But
unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, we'll be back in Boston in June. Now, when we come back, a team that I thought could have been in competition for June had the Load Management Bowl last night, and that's Dan Titus's Philadelphia 76ers. Back here on The Good Word with Dan Titus. Dan, as I picked on you earlier, I'm going to name you the starting five for your Philadelphia 76ers last night home game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Reggie Jackson, Kelly Oubre Jr., Ricky Council IV, Eric Gordon, and Gershon Yabusele. Now, how many of those players would you say, in my wildest fantasies of the Philadelphia 76ers being a genuine playoff team playing in late May and early June, how many of those guys would you have said, you know what, those guys be playing for us?
One, Kelly Oubre. And only because he'd be a rotational player in the best sense of the of everything working perfectly. Everybody else, nah, you shouldn't be getting any minutes. But that's where we are with, in game 38 of the Philadelphia 76ers experience. It's a front end of a back-to-back. I understand why they did it, but I just feel bad for the fans at this point. You have the best team in the Western Conference coming over to play a basketball game. They showed up. SGA didn't miss a shot to the third quarter. Finished with what, 32 points, 9 assists. J-Dub showed up. But like to have to watch Jeff Doughton go for a career high 18 points, and I don't know. It's just laughable at this point. Like y'all got to figure out a way that you got to have one superstar on the court at all times in every game. It's ridiculous that this team, with their big three and how much money is invested, they've only shared the court, Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and Paul George, in 10 games, 192 minutes they've played together. Do you realize the Knicks, top 7 3-man lineups, have over 1,000 minutes together? Like, what? How do you expect to win or build any chemistry if your players aren't playing together? It's a joke, man. And Jalen Rose said it on the telecast last night on NBA, on TNT. It's the most disappointing team in the NBA this year. And I have to agree. Like, how can you not agree?
Well, to be fair, comparing any 3-man unit
to a Tibbs.
Any 3-man unit, Tibbs unit. Look, when you buy a car, right? when you buy a car. When you buy a car, seriously, when you buy a car and you look at the odometer, it's miles. It doesn't say highway miles or city miles. It just says miles. When you look at a player and you're about to invest in a player, you know how many miles he got, but do you know how many Tibbs miles he has on that odometer, okay? Tibbs miles are damaging, okay? Tibbs miles, I forgot who was on Twitter that said Andrew Wiggins had wound up signing a long-term extension with Minnesota way, way back when Tibbs was coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And someone tweeted and said, his knee is going to fall off. The Cardinals going to fall off his knee like rib meat off the bone when Tibbs gets through with him.
And he still looks all right, though. He survived it. Lewell Deng didn't survive it.
Lewell Deng had a spinal tap, man. That man had a spinal tap during the playoffs. That man almost died. I'm not laughing about Lewell Deng dying.
Sure,
I'm saying that this is how dire it is when you play for Tibbs. And the crazy thing is, I think it's Stockholm Syndrome because all those dudes love him. It doesn't matter. Mind you, I love Tibbs. I think Tibbs is a really good dude. I think he's a really good coach who makes the most out of what he has because he plays his best players all the damn time. Reserves.
It's a nice luxury to have. It's a nice luxury to have. Like, I wish I could play my guys that type of mileage, but like, Paul George signed a max deal.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, at some point, you got to be accountable. Like, we need you on the floor. Tyrese Maxey, you got a massive extension too. He's been the one that's, I think, been the most consistent here.
Yep.
So I understand him taking a break, but, you know, Joel Embiid's going through another foot injury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at this point, I don't know. Maybe they're just, their aspirations are to be a middling team, and then they're going to get a mid-tier draft pick that's going to go to the Thunder probably. So at this point, I don't really know what the goal is. The goal is to be healthy towards the playoffs, right? I don't know if that makes your chances higher to going further if you're having to go through a playing game, an additional game, and then you have to actually face real teams the coming rounds and beat them all. Like, it just seems like they're setting themselves up for failure this whole time. So
I got you. For one, is Paul George a superstar?
Not anymore. They're not treating him like one. Give that man the ball.
Well, there's that, right? Yeah, he said that he doesn't like playing the back line of defense. He doesn't like playing, you know, center pretty much or second type of tier center. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
He wants to defend. But when you defend, you get hurt. And they don't want you to get hurt because you get hurt a lot. But you said something about the playoff gauntlet. I'm going to read you the Philadelphia 76ers schedule between now and February 9th. Okay? So right before All-Star break. Not exactly All-Star break, but a couple days before All-Star break. Are you ready, Dan Titus?
Let's go.
They play the Knicks, at the Pacers, at the Bucks, at Denver, home to Cleveland, at Chicago, Lakers, Kings, Nuggets, Celtics, Mavs, Heat, all at home. Nice long stretch. Then you got the Pistons on the road and the Bucks on the road. Tell me where you see a dog team amongst those other than the Chicago Bulls who might very well beat you.
I'm about to say, I heard one win out of that.
One guaranteed win out of that, right?
Right. And it's not like being home is a good thing for them. They're 6-12 at home. So it's like, yeah, I don't know what magic post you need to, what fairy dust you need to sprinkle on this roster, but I think it's time.
Say
it's either blow it up.
Say
you got to blow it up or just put them all out there. And if they get hurt, they get hurt. It is what it is. Because at this point, you're not playing. You're playing to lose. Like, you're 15-23. Like, this isn't getting any better anytime soon unless you have your best players on the floor. So take some accountability, be veterans, get your ass on the floor. Like, I get you're playing through injuries, but everybody plays through injuries.
For those who don't know, Joel Embiid will be 31 years old in March. And I know, in the case of like Hakeem Olajuwon, I think Hakeem was 33 when he won his first championship, but that's an extreme example because Hakeem helped carry the Rockets to the finals when he was in his third year, if I remember correctly. Drafted in 84, 85, 86, second year center with Rab Sampson and all those guys, beat Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, beat them, and didn't get back to the finals for another 8 years. He was 33 years old. Okay, fine. Centers usually, I get it, they develop a little bit later. They come full bloom later. Shaquille O'Neal was in year 8 or 9 when he got back to the finals with the Lakers and began his run. David Robinson was basically on the back end of his career when Tim Duncan got there, and that helped him.
For sure.
If you don't get it done by 30, 31, there's not a lot of precedent for being able to get it done with all the miles on your body at 32, 33, 34 years old. My question is, and not saying that you could find a buyer, right? But do you start asking the question, what is our long-term future with Joel Embiid?
After he won MVP, his value was never higher. They should have been looking to trade him then because you already knew all of the injury risks and the time off load management that was going to come with the Joel Embiid experience. And now I think you see them in this spot where they just gave him a ton of money and you're already seeing the questions come up of his availability. And so now it begs the question, like, can you even get anything? I mean, you can get something for him, but are you going to get the value that you could have had years ago when he was at his peak? And I don't know that you can. So right now, like, what teams can actively trade for him? You know, we're looking at teams with cap space because with the new tax aprons, no one's just going to want to sign up for a 31-year-old that's going to be paid through 2029. Like, that just looks ugly on the books.
I'm going to read it off for people who don't know. He's making 51 this year, 55 next year, right around 58 and 27. Right around 63 and 28, and a player option, which I'm sure he is going to pick up,
has
for $67 million in 28, 29, when he will be, what, 36?
He ain't making it, bro.
36? Oh, he better make it. He want that money. He better make it. He better drag whatever body parts work out there to go collect that money. And we joke and we laugh about it, but he's not going to be a what-if story, right? I don't think, Titus, because we got a chance to see what the best of Joel Embiid looked like. We just didn't see it long, and we also didn't see him rise up in a playoff situation and carry his team further beyond what the team should have been. Like, that's going to be the basketball tragedy that is Joel Embiid. We're going to look at that Kawhi Leonard play.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But that bounce play, that might have been the closest the Philadelphia 76ers with Joel Embiid, that team that had Ben Simmons, who was still functional, mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler as fourth quarter closer, Tobias Harris. I mean, yeah, you had Brett Brown as your coach, which might have been the thing that prevented you from actually going anywhere. You know what I mean? But that might have very well been the closest, either that or the Trae Young Atlanta Hawks series where Ben Simmons refused to dunk. Either way, I'm sorry, Philly fans.
I'm about to say, man, this is like daggers. It's like,
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to give you the daggers. I apologize. Y'all won a Super Bowl a few years ago. Y'all should be happy.
Yeah. Word. Yeah, you're right.
But I wonder, in this new luxury tax punitive world, granted, you're going to have another salary cap jump over the next couple of years because of the TV money coming in and everything else because of the media rights deal, where before a $40 million deal may feel like a $25 million deal, you know, all in all. But who's going to want to take on the risk of Joel Embiid, and then you have to match the money, and then you may have to throw in the draft picks and everything else? Like, this is just not going to feel good on the back end of it. And you have built this team with Paul George, with Tyrese Maxey, with all the other guys. You built that team for this year, and now you have to pay for the back end of Paul George as he ages into 37, 38, 39. Like, this is just going to look ugly.
Mm-hmm. It's going to look real ugly, and I feel like that's, I don't know, this is where we need to talk about the accountability, right? Like, Daryl Morey has not said anything all season long. This is all fell on Nick Nurse. Mm-hmm. And his ability to do what he can with what he's provided. And mm-hmm. I don't think he hasn't gotten a fair shake. Most coaches in the NBA don't really get fair shakes, but I'm surprised he still has his job for as long as he has. And I mean, do you think it's going to last the whole season if this continues?
Well, here's the thing. If Daryl Morey fires Nick Nurse, right, then Daryl Morey is basically shining the spotlight on himself.
True.
So you keep Nick Nurse there. If for no other reason, for self-preservation. Mind you, Nick Nurse is a man who has his own logo on a hat that he wears around. It says NN on a hat. I promise you. That's the only coach I've ever seen with a damn logo, like his own logo. Ingenuity, Americana, all that stuff, right? But man, like, nobody can say that they've done a good job over there. Daryl Morey is the ultimate, he was the ultimate sort of, I'm selling you the plan without the plan actually working. And he gets people to buy into the plan. Like, Philly is the ultimate, I'm sorry, y'all.
Suckers.
Y'all were the ultimate, we're buying into the plan group. Y'all were the ultimate.
We had no choice.
Y'all were so gullible.
We've had 15 years of this, like, yo, just trust us. Yo, we got you. It's all right. Hey, look at what we got. We got Joel Embiid. Ooh, we went to the... almost to the Eastern Conference, you know, to the championship. Like, I mean, they've just keep on having these like peaks, and then the lows though just outweigh all of the promise and progress that we should have made in this time. We could have a whole pod on their terrible draft picks over the years. Like,
we could.
And then the questionable moves. Why is Elton Brand still there? What is he doing? What is he proving? Running an organization. What is he proving?
They had a chance to keep Jimmy Butler and couldn't or didn't.
Yeah.
They had a chance to get Jimmy Butler. They had a chance to get Jimmy Butler back this summer.
Yeah.
They didn't.
Can't read the room.
They don't know what the lights are in the room. Can't read the room. The room is dark. What are we doing? Philadelphia, y'all supposed to be one of the toughest fan bases in the history of American sports, and y'all letting this stuff fly. Now, they booed when they saw that starting five yesterday. So I wonder if some of the patience is running thin amongst the natives. But y'all let this nonsense run for damn near 15 years. Y'all should be ashamed of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice, Titus, thanks for joining us.
But I say it was nice to see Justin Edwards do his thing. But, like, yeah, Philly fans deserve better. Maybe they'll get it on Wednesday night against the Knicks. We'll see.
Maybe they won't. Maybe they don't deserve better. Dan, Titus, my man, really appreciate you, brother.
No doubt.
Welcome to The Last Word. Of course, it is time for Wednesdays with Ice. Ice Young, thanks for joining us live from Philadelphia. Ice, how you doing this morning?
I'm good, fam. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a bit surprised at the words of one Draymond Green. Draymond, I talked to last week when the Warriors were in Detroit. They squeaked out a win by the skin of their chinny chin chin. And it was apparent that this team is not good. Like, not good in the way of being a perennial playoff team, not good in the way of being a contender. If they want to elevate themselves to the upper echelon, they're going to need to make some serious personnel changes. And it doesn't seem like they are going to do it. Ice, I'm going to play you the sound of Draymond Green, and you're going to tell me what you think about Draymond Green's words.
The beautiful part about being in the space that we're in is Steve Kerr, Steph Kerr, and myself all disagree with mortgaging off the future of this organization, saying that we're going for it right now. Bad teams do that. Bad organizations do that. We're neither one. So for us, we want, if something is going to happen, it needs to be the right thing. We're not going to jump and make the wrong decision because we panic. That's how you set your organization back 5 to 7 years.
Ice, what do you think about that?
Drama. Drama was the first thing that came to mind. First of all, I guess first thing that comes to mind really is just the aspect of time. You know, it's such a funny thing. We all think we have so much of it. We all think we have more of it. And we never look at it like the clock is really ticking down. But I think the first thing I thought with him saying, you know, we shouldn't mortgage our future right now to win is, okay, then when? Like, when is it appropriate to have a sense of urgency? Draymond is 34. Steph Curry is 36. Steph has quoted himself a couple of times throughout the season saying, you know, the end is near and that's okay. Like, it's almost a beautiful thing to look at and that I've had an awesome career and I'm towards the end. But physically speaking, and the way in which these guys are playing, they're old guys in the league now. That's, you know, a nice way to put it is they're old. And so there needs to be a sense of urgency. I would think that if they're trying to win a fifth title, they're doing things to make it happen now. I think it's interesting, too, that, you know, all three of them, Steve Kerr, Steph, and Draymond, seem to be on the same page with this. They have all separately given their little tidbits about, you know, we're not mortgaging our future right now. We're planning for the future. We're planning for more time. And I mean, I understand you want to be calculated and you don't want to make the wrong moves. But I also think that the element of time here is a bit more important than maybe they're thinking it is. And it's not to also say that, you know, they would need more than one player to get them to that championship level. It's not like they can make one move and, oh, they add a Bradley Beal or somebody and it's over. Like, they need help, plural. And so I just think this is really interesting. I'm curious to get your take, but like, it's a little too cool for me, you know, for a team that is 3-13 in their past 16 games and it ain't looking good.
I have a number of thoughts. One, allow me to, shall we say, pat Yahoo Sports on the back, because we started this entire conversation that everybody is eating off the fat of, okay? I talked to Draymond Green over a week ago. And then when those comments came out, everybody said, oh, let's go ask Steve Kerr. Let's go ask Stephen Curry. Make sure y'all remember where the conversation began.
Give my boy his credit. While you're here. Yes, hey, I agree.
That being said, I think it is a mature way for someone like Draymond Green to speak of it. When you think of Draymond Green and his situation with Kevin Durant, whether you believe Kevin Durant was going to leave or not, that situation was made a lot more comfortable. Uncomfortable. Jordan Poole, you know, I mean, you played Mike Tyson punch out at a practice, and that was the young guy that amongst all of the young guys that you had, the Moses Moody, the James Wiseman, Jonathan Kuminga, every young guy that you had that you actually invested in that you thought was going to be part of this two timeline thing, Jordan Poole was A, the guy that you didn't see coming, and B, the most productive, and that relationship was tarnished because of that regrettable moment. Therefore, you had to trade him for a year of Chris Paul, who is another old guy, and it didn't help you. All it did was give you cap relief. So Draymond Green is not the person or the player who should be telling Joe Lacob and Mike Dunleavy Jr., hey, go get us more help. He's not really in the position to be saying that. He has to kind of take a, you know, 30,000-foot view and say, I'm not the dude. If anybody can say that, it might be Steph Curry. If anybody else can say that, it ain't me. Right? Cool.
Yeah.
The other part of this is that I think is really even more fascinating, Ice. Steph Curry took a max deal, a max extension a couple of years, not a couple years ago, last year. He took a max deal that extends his contract 2 more years beyond this year. Usually what happens in today's NBA, if we're going to the LeBron James School of Leverage, right? You don't take the extension. You put pressure on the organization to do all the things that you want them to do, or else I can walk. Steph Curry handed in his leverage by saying, you know what? I want my money. I want all of my money. So give me the max. And yeah, we're going to tie up the cap. It's going to put us in all these other type of spots. But give me the max. And also, y'all know I'm not going nowhere. So if that's the case, I can't really put pressure on you. And even though you see, even though Stephen Curry is Stephen Curry, it's a lot more difficult to make a trade for someone making $63 million in today's NBA, as you can see with the Jimmy Butler saga and the Bradley Beal saga. So once you make that type of money, you are basically signing up to say, I am with this organization come hell and high water. And the last part for me is this, Ice, and this is where I'm really fascinated what you think. He said, you know, we're going to be sitting on the sidelines when we're all done, you know, watching this. Is that him saying, you know, Steph's going to be part of ownership? Maybe I'm a part of the front office. Maybe Steve Kerr moves into the part of the front office. Remember, Steve Kerr was a part of the front office in Phoenix two decades ago during the Steve Nash era, before he wound up going into the broadcast booth, before he wound up going into coaching. So I wonder if they all have a very set in stone long play here that basically says, hey, y'all, we're just going to ride this out. We're going to try to compete, but we're not going to hamstring ourselves because this is our investment too.
I think so. I think it's fair to say that they may be, you know, raising the white flag, so to speak. I think that's totally fair. It's interesting, though, because for the competitors that they are and what they've done and the dynasty that they created winning 4 championships, you might expect there to be a little bit more fight and, you know, one kind of real run to go after a fifth before you raise the white flag. And so for me, that'll be interesting to see, you know, what they do the rest of this season, if they do anything at all before trade deadline, which it doesn't seem like they will. But hey, maybe they were just talking and they surprise us. Who knows? That would be the NBA for you. But also to see what they do in terms of next season. I'm curious if this is really their mindset. But if it is, like you said, it makes perfect sense that they're planning for next steps. And to be quite honest, rightfully so. It's not like we haven't seen both of them take steps in terms of setting up their careers after. We've seen Draymond do some broadcasting and different things like that. And so as they should. But I totally agree with you with your first point, is that he isn't the person that should be saying these things. If this came from Steph, we could look at it, you know, totally differently. But with the history that exists, it's just hard to see his perspective, especially if he's saying this and planning for the future and him being off the court. Then it's like, that's not really fair.
I will say this as a point of being able to acknowledge my own hypocrisy, right? I can acknowledge it. And here I am. I'm falling on the sword for y'all. I don't always like when LeBron would issue these cryptic statements, you know, and putting all this inherent pressure on the Cleveland Cavaliers before he left the second time, or the Los Angeles Lakers this time, where basically you're forcing your team into panic moves, which then actually sets you back, like the Russell Westbrook trade, like some of the other moves that the Lakers have done to try to augment LeBron and AD. It feels a bit smarmy, right? It doesn't make you feel good. The difference for me in that is this. And although there is some hypocrisy, not going to lie, there's some hypocrisy, but not completely. There's a slight difference. The one difference to me is the Golden State Warriors did not have a footprint in the NBA map, in a modern NBA map, other than Run TMC of Tim Hardaway and Chris Mullin, Mitch Richmond, other than PJ Carlissimo getting choked out, other than, you know, the eighth seed, we believe Warriors winning the playoff series against Dirk, right? Like, that is the modern footprint of the Golden State Warriors before Stephen Curry got there. They didn't have that. And then Steph gets there. Steph gets over his injuries. And then now they are modern NBA royalty. I won't say you owe him, but let's keep in mind what you were before him. Let's not get too haughty. Let's not get too arrogant and say, you know, like there's the Jay-Z line, say, y'all say y'all made Hov? Go ahead. Make another Hov. Y'all not making another Steph.
Facts.
There's not another one coming down the pike. I know Jonathan Kuminga has come on. I know you guys believe in Brandon Podziemski, which the bloom is off of that rose, right? Championship runs are very difficult to come by. I admire organizations that say, you know what? We're going to pay the price on the back end, and we know it's going to be pain, and we know it's going to hurt. But we owe it to this fan base, to this era of basketball, to put all money in, all chips in. You got to be all in all the time. And let's be honest, Ice, when you picked Moses Moody and it didn't pan out, when you picked James Wiseman number two and it didn't pan out, and Jonathan Kuminga is just starting to figure out, but when you made those draft picks and you didn't make smarter selections or trade those picks for veteran players,
yeah,
that's where you screwed it up. And they won the 2022 NBA championship without reasonable contributions from any of those dudes. So that adds to the arrogance, that adds to the hubris. But Ice, come on, man. You're not going to sit up somewhere and there's a phrase that they might X out of here. You're not going to piss down my back and tell me it's rain. You're not going to pretend that Joe Lacob and Mike Dunleavy got all the answers and that good times is just going to keep on going when Steph and that number goes up to the rafters. That ain't how this works.
Facts.
That's just what I agree.
There needs to be more support there.
But I understand. But Ice, I understand. And I've talked on both sides of my mouth. I understand, like, the sobriety of it. I understand them being really realistic and saying, man, we would have to do a lot to get another player here, more players here in this, you know, really punitive luxury tax apron world and all sort of type of stuff to get, you know, another guy here and sacrifice draft picks and everything just for a chance at getting blown out by Oklahoma City in the playoff series. Nobody, you know, they may not want that, right? And Steph Curry isn't the guy that can carry you through a playoff series. I completely get that. So I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. I completely understand it. And if you call me a hypocrite, I totally get it. That's fine. Now, something really interesting happened over the weekend, Ice. The Unrivaled League had their media day. And for those who don't know, it's a professional women's basketball league that will start and finish before the start of the W basketball season, right? Like, I saw Angel Reese. I saw Brittany Griner. I saw a bunch of WNBA stars doing their media day. It seemed like the media day was really, really fun. It seems like the setup is really, really fun with the way that the rules are. I know you can get into a little bit of that. But just, Ice, talk about what their goal is for this, aside from the obvious one of, hey, we need to make a lot more money and capitalize on our fame, aside from just holding on to the WNBA and that schedule.
Yeah, literally. I mean, I think it's a league created by the players for the players. And so every time you're looking at it and you're getting a marketing push or you're seeing media day, that's the feel that it's giving, is like the players had the autonomy to decide what they wanted there. You know, big brands and brand deals have come in for them already. Sephora, Samsung Galaxy, Ally, you know, the debut of the league is this Friday. And so Ally is hosting 6 different watch parties across the country and getting people to show up and go to bars. Like, they're getting people to show up and watch. It's 3v3 basketball, which, you know, if you like basketball and you like fast pace, it's going to be that. It's going to be some of the most skilled and talented women in the world, but playing a fast-paced game, one that exposes you if you don't play defense and play both sides of the basketball. And so it's a really intense game. It's played on a full court, but condensed. So not like a half court, like we saw in FIBA 3x3, right? And some of their rules are different. They get 6 fouls in this one. I know that was driven by the players because they're tired of fouling out. And there's even a rule that even if they have 6 fouls and it's the last person, you just get a technical foul and you get to shoot, but we still play with 3 people, right? So basically, you could go out there and hack somebody. But I'm sure that that's not the goal. It's led by, you know, Breanna Stewart and Afisa Collier. And so they've done a great job with all the marketing, getting these games on TNT and the different, I don't know, I feel like the broadcast team is great. You have WNBA legends that are covering it, and Alisa Leslie and Candace Parker as well. So you have the voices that you need to represent the game. And it's happening in Miami. Like, how fun to be there for 8 weeks and play basketball. And so I'm really looking forward to it.
It's the funny thing for me, Ice, and I thought this was the really fascinating part of it. And maybe it's just me, because I grew up playing basketball without a clock, right? This one doesn't have a clock. This one just has a target score, kind of like Elam ending, for those who are familiar with the NBA All-Star game, what they started trying, I think, in 2020, and how they've tried to revamp that. We can talk about that another day. But just the fact that they're saying, we're not playing to a clock. We're playing to a score. For me in Detroit, we were playing to 12. We were playing to 12 by ones and twos. And those were in the days where if you took a long-ass three or a long-ass two and you missed, baby, you was catching hell. I'm not sure that's happening here. But what do you think about that, Ice, of the fact that they're not playing to the time, they're playing to the score?
Yeah, it's a good, interesting point. What I'll say is, you know, if you're a fan of TBT basketball that happens every summer and you like the Elam ending, like you mentioned, it's a kind of dramatic finish. And if the game is close, I mean, it's the difference between me scoring 8 points versus you scoring 7. For them, they're adding 11 points at the end of that third quarter. I think it makes it interesting because it's such a fast-paced game, right? And you're playing ones and twos and people should be scoring almost every possession. It really critically emphasizes, you know, defense and making sure that you're also defending as you're scoring. So I'm excited for it. I think like anything else, it's the first year of something. So they're going to try some things out. We're going to see what works. They're going to see what people like. How easy is it also for the random fan to happen to tune in and understand what's going on and, you know, catch along. So I think those will be some things that they'll have to review early, but I'm excited that it's different. You know, also there's a one-on-one competition, which I think is so cool. Like, there's a one-on-one competition where all the girls in the league will play. There's a cash prize. And I think the teammates of the person that wins also gets, like, a 10K extra bonus as well. So, like, shout out to you and your teammate for winning. But, I mean, these are all the players in the game, the Arike Ogunbowales, the Stewies, and Afisa Colliers that are great in one-on-one situations. So I also just think a one-on-one tournament is very old school, very true to the game. And I think if there's anything that you need to make a pro basketball league right now in this day and age, like, you need to keep it true to the game because people want to watch real good basketball.
It's funny what happens when you said true, real and true basketball. Some of the things that the guys resist, right? The guys resist playing one-on-one at All-Star Weekend because they don't want to be embarrassed. Right?
Yeah.
The guys don't want to play hard at All-Star Weekend
because
they don't want to be embarrassed. The ladies, they're like, hey, we competing out here.
Let's go.
The men can learn something from this. Ice Young, really appreciate you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me, fam.
Thanks to Dan and Ice for joining us on today's show. Thanks to producer Carter and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week with another episode of The Good Word. And until then, everybody be safe.